This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good evening. This is Rock Cash, your host this week on The People Speak. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen by phone calling 716-748-0144, or if you have a smartphone or a computer, go to bbsradio.com, navigate to station 2, click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests toll-free, USA, Canada, 888-429-5471. It's a real great pleasure having tonight's guest, William Blunden, a former State Department employee, journalist, author of many books, such as The Killing Hope, Free the World to Death, West Bloc Dissident, Rogue State, America's Deadliest Export, Democracy is his new book. William, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much.
William, what got you started on all of this? Something had to, you know, pop up in your face and say, hey, look, something's wrong here.
Yeah, I can explain it in one word. It begins with a V. What do you think that is?
Vietnam, yes.
Yeah, I was working at the State Department as a good, loyal anti-communist, hoping to become a foreign service officer and join the great crusade against communism. And then this war came along with all its horrors, and it just changed my thinking and my life. I could not take part in that. I could not be part of the same side which could do things like that to other people. And that was... And I resigned, and I began with other people. We formed the first underground newspaper in Washington, D.C., the Washington Free Press, and that's how I began writing.
Well, that was really, really a devastation to the Vietnamese people.
I think if some of the American leaders back then knew how many people in America would become radicalized because of the war in Vietnam, they might have had second thoughts about it. Because I get so many emails from people over the years telling me that it was Vietnam which changed their thinking about U.S. foreign policy. So I think our leaders really, from their own point of view, they did a bad thing.
That they did indeed. So Iraq and Afghanistan and Osama bin Laden, please explain to our audience about all of this and what you've seen or what you think happened through all of this.
Well, the main point I always emphasize in my writing and in my speaking about U.S. foreign policy is that if you want to understand our policies, you must first understand and accept a basic premise, a basic idea, that the U.S. government seeks to dominate the world. Once you've understood that basic premise, things are much clearer. And all these things you mentioned, and many others, they're all part of the same master plan of world domination. And from Vietnam to Afghanistan to Ukraine now. So that's the main point to keep in mind. And I can explain that further if you want, but that's the main idea.
Well, is it our government personnel, or is it the rogue government? Is it secret society? Is it the Israelis, the Jews? Who is it that's doing this to us? That wants us to go to war?
The personnel are. It's the same policy beginning with Harry Truman and ending with Barack Obama. There hasn't been a single president who was not guided by this overweening point of view. So it's not a question of personalities or individuals. And the motivation is, to a large extent, ideological. We believe very much in what is known as American exceptionalism, and we like to impart or impose that view upon the whole world. That's one motivation. Then there's the economic. We are a capitalist nation, and we have major corporations, oil and otherwise, and they're always looking to expand new markets, new customers, new oil wells, and what have you. So that's the economic. Those are the two main motivations. There's also the institutionalized motivation. After decades and decades of this kind of foreign policy, you've created a vast civil service, a vast foreign service, a vast government bureaucracy, and a vast defense department, all of whom have had 40, 50, 60 years of this, and it's part of their lifeblood. And it's part of their careers. You have many career-oriented individuals who have learned very well that to tie their fortunes to U.S. imperialism, and they're not about to rock the boat. One year after another, they are all looking to pursue the same goals. So that's another thing which is institutionalized, along with the economic and the ideological. And there are other factors one can name as well. But those are the main ones.
Okay. The spread of democracy in the Middle East, what do you perceive of that?
I could have added in. At the same time as these are the motivations behind our policies, we know what we can't say this to the world. And so what we say to the world is that we're fighting for democracy and freedom. And at the same time, we're supporting dictatorships one after the other. It's a total contradiction. It can't be minimized in any way. The contradictions and the hypocrisy are total. And it's so great that it's hard for the average American to believe it. They can't believe that their glorious, beloved leaders who talk so beautifully about democracy and freedom and human rights and self-determination, they can't believe that these same people are guilty of war crimes. An unending succession of war crimes spanning decades and decades. It's very difficult for the average American to accept that. And one of my main audiences. Those people are who I have in mind in my writing and in my speaking. Because I know I have to get past that barrier in their head. They have a very hard time accepting the idea that their government, in its foreign policy, does not mean well. And as long as they have that basic belief that we do mean well, it's very difficult for people like me to reach them. And so I often aim my words at such people and at such a basic belief, which is unconscious in the minds of most of them. They aren't even aware. In fact, when I've mentioned this point, speaking to people on the left, I've been told many times that they themselves had not thought of that, people on the left. So imagine the average American, they're not conscious of the fact that they proceed with this basic belief that their government means well. And it's, I would suggest to any activists out there in your audience that they keep that in mind when they're dealing with Americans, that they must attempt to get beyond that meaning well barrier.
Yeah, well, most Americans think that by going overseas and killing other people, we're keeping ourselves safe and free, but that's not the thing. If we want to keep ourselves safe and free, then we should be more concerned with a national defensive that would deter anybody that was going to attack us.
Well, not we already have that. I mean, there's no one who can attack us with any hope of success, so that is not something to aim for. We're at that point already.
Okay, and with that being said, who do you think attacked us on 9/11?
I'm reluctant to get into that subject because I've had so many bad experiences on that subject in my speaking and in writing.
Well, you're speaking to an audience of mostly awake people that understand what's going on in today's world.
I'm sure your audience includes many of the type who attack me. Let me say this: I know that the government version of what happened on 9/11 is full of holes. I've read the books, I've seen the videos, I know of all the many contradictions and impossibilities and the lies. So I have no. It's not that I accept the government version, but as I tell the 9/11 people again and again, for me to accept the idea that it was an inside job, that it was planned and carried out by the Bush administration, to me to believe that I have to be told. What happened, what actually happened to the planes and to the people. Even if I agree that the government story is bullshit, I still have to know those things to join the ranks of the 9/11 truthers. Is that clear?
Yeah, I agree with you. From what I recall from that morning and the reports and everything else, it was planes. The flights have disappeared over Ohio. Flights, all three of the flights actually disappeared off the radar over Ohio, and I know of Rice Airfield. But anyways, let's not spend too much time on 9/11. What is your consensus of what's going on right now in the Middle East? The Syria-Iraq situation.
The U.S. government owes a great deal of apology to the people of the Middle East. They have made a horrible mess of it. They took the two most advanced governments, Libya and Iraq, both of them secular. They took these two advanced secular governments with high levels of education, sophisticated people. They took them and made the two countries basket cases. They're almost like failed states. And this is our legacy. It's going to last for a long, long time.
That's what they're trying to do with Syria and Iran now.
Right. They're already well underway with Syria. They've caused great harm and damage. So far, Iran has not been bombed, but one cannot count on that. The people who run our foreign policy would love to add Iran to the long list of bombing targets. Since the end of World War II, we have dropped bombs on more than 30 countries, and the list is not closed yet, obviously. So Iran, maybe next. Syria is already in process, and we're causing great harm now in Ukraine, supporting a side in that civil war, the side which overthrew a democratically elected government without help, without support. And now the new government, which has a number of neo-Nazis in high positions, this is who our allies are. This new government is now carrying out a terrible war against its own people. And I don't know why the rebels in Ukraine have undertaken this. They must have known that if the government could wipe them out. I would guess they expected that the Russia would come to their aid, but Russia hasn't done that. And so they're alone, and they're fighting against a government supported by NATO and the U.S. and the European Union. They have no chance. And this government in Ukraine is now attacking villages all over the place, bombing apartment buildings and schools, and there's no end to it. So that's going to be the next basket case.
Well, what's the story with Israel behind this? Do you think any of this is for Israel? Or is this all just the spread of democracy for the United States? Or is it the bankers that are pushing this? What is the main focus? Or is it the elitists with the one world government?
What are you referring to, Ukraine or what?
We're pretty much Ukraine. I know that there was some Mossad agents that were the cause of stirring up actual riots there, and stirring the pots, so to speak, with the uprisings and
I'm not familiar with these stories about Mossad in Ukraine. I have no love for them, but I don't blame them for everything in the world. And I haven't heard the stuff about them in Ukraine.
Right. Okay. Well, what do you think is going to happen next? Do you see us going to World War III? Are we being pushed into another war? Are we sending our kids to die for these imbeciles?
I don't know what's going to happen. I seldom engage in prediction. I don't want to look too stupid in the end. I don't know what's going to happen there.
Okay. No, that's fine. No need to predict. Let's talk about what has happened. What do you think of the Israeli-Palestinian issue?
You know, I stopped reading closely about that years ago because it's the same thing year after year, decade after decade. Nothing ever changes. The same stories day after day. And I know that's a very sad commentary, but that's the way I feel, and I don't follow it very closely because I just don't see anything changing. I have no love for the Israelis and for their policies, but Hamas makes me wonder also. They are a very Islamic-oriented government, and they have ties to the Islamic extremists in Syria and elsewhere. So I'm not a great fan of Hamas either.
Right. But I also agree with you, but Israel helped to spawn Hamas in the beginning.
Yeah, but Israel didn't help them to become Islamic extremists. I don't know enough about that to say any more, but I don't support either side there.
Okay.
Well, I was raised to be a good little Zionist boy. My parents are from Eastern Europe, and they were
right
Orthodox Jews.
Okay.
My mother would turn in her grave if she knew how her son turned out.
I know. I'm a Palestinian, and when you're in America, it's hard to look back in different things. I consider myself an American now, but I look at things as an injustice to start with, in all different fashions. Whether the Israelis are doing something wrong, or Hamas is doing something wrong, I just see more of the same thing, that it is really not a movement of really Zionistic pleasure, but it's just a homeland for the Jews. It really didn't matter where they had the homeland for the Jews, but it was a lot easier to take Palestine since
It didn't matter to them. There was a biblical tie to the land they're in. Now, that's what motivated them to choose that place.
Right. But that was only biblical. They are not, the seed of the land is per se, as we know from recent reports of different people. We know that they're not the direct descendants of the seed of Abraham and stuff like that.
Well,
but
they think they are. So,
excuse me.
We're talking about their motivation. That they think they are.
Oh, they think they are. Okay. I see. But that's pretty much mostly just a ideology that they have or they've been affiliated with. But factual history and everything else tells us that they're not. But I could see what their belief is, but still, it's no right. There is no right to massacre people and take over a land. Can you tell us, Mike in California wants to know, can you tell us what, can you talk about Osama bin Laden endorsing your book, your Rogue State book?
Well, that was in January of 2006. Bin Laden, in one of his audio tapes, suggested that Americans should read my book, Rogue State, and to get a better understanding of why he and his people are so opposed to U.S. foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
My book was translated into Arabic, and I assume that's what he read, the Arabic version.
Right.
And that made me an instant celebrity. His announcing that I was, my photo was on page one of the Washington Post with a long story inside about me, and I was interviewed on all the major TV networks and many smaller ones and radio as well. And so for about a week or 10 days, I was a celebrity, but that's that's in the past.
Right.
My book, I estimate I sold about 20,000 copies of that book, more than I would have if not for the so-called endorsements by Bin Laden.
Right.
Although it cost me, it actually cost me money, the whole thing. I made money on those 20,000 copies, but I lost my campus speaking engagements. I was persona non grata on American college campuses because of that. And I had been getting 7 or 8 paid speaking engagements each year from campuses that fell to 0 or 1 per year. That cost me a lot of money. So America had its revenge upon me.
I see. And they will do that once you're publicly speaking about the system or going against it. I have another question from a listener. Patricia in Oklahoma wants to know, does Mr. Blum think that the USA is an evil empire doomed to fail?
An evil empire?
Yes.
Doomed to fail?
Yes.
Is that what she said?
Yes.
I don't use the word evil. I think we're an empire for sure, and we do a great deal of harm. Okay, if you want, I can use the word evil. It's okay. Doomed to fail. Well, every empire eventually comes to an end. This one here is not going to come to its end in my lifetime, unfortunately. But some younger people who are listening in can look forward to that day, maybe. But it'll be a while. We have such military power that we'll keep on going. Even if we bankrupt the society, even if half the population is unemployed, the military will get its budget, and the empire will keep on bombing and overthrowing governments. I've compiled a summary of U.S. foreign policy since the end of the Second World War. It's in that time, we have attempted to overthrow more than 50 governments. We have attempted to assassinate more than 50 foreign leaders. We have, as I said before, bombed more than 30 countries. We have suppressed about 30 attempts at revolution. And there's one more on my list. What was that? This is all on at the beginning of my new book, which you mentioned.
America's deadliest export. Democracy.
Now, that title, of course, is facetious. It's deadly because what we call democracy has been a horror for the people upon whom it's been imposed. Anyway, that's the title, and these lists I speak of, they're all explained in detail at the beginning of that book.
Right. Well, I'm going to hold off on the next question until we come back. We're going to take a quick break. This is Rock Cash. We'll be right back with our guest, William Blum.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to BBSRadio.com.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Welcome back to the People Speak Radio on the BBS Radio Network. This is Rock Cash with my guest, William Blum, author of America's Deadliest Export, Democracy. Welcome back, William. William, hi. I've got a caller on line two. I've got Mark from California on line two, and he's got a couple of questions to ask you.
Mr. Blum, First of all, it's good to hear you. I hope you're in good health, my friend. And my question you is, you're in good, that's good. I just heard a little coughing there. I hope we're not, you're okay.
Yeah, I wasn't anyway. Coughing. I'm in the statement.
Well, my question for you is, if you still believe in the United States as a country that's viable, are you politically involved? Do you support any of the candidates, Republican, Democrat, Independent? And if so, why and who? Thank you so much.
Well, in recent years, I have voted for Ralph Nader, I think, 3 times. I have not voted for a Democrat or Republican, I think, since 1964, when I voted for Lyndon Baines Johnson against Barry Goldwater. But that was mainly against Goldwater for Johnson. Anyway, that's the last time I voted in a national election for either of the two main parties. I wish there was a good and viable third party. The Greens do some good things and say many nice things, as did Ralph Nader, but the system is rigged against such people. It's virtually impossible to get on the ballot in every state, for one thing, and a third party candidate cannot get into the national debates. That's a very important factor. I think if Ralph Nader was allowed on those debates, he would have come very close to some of the other candidates in votes. But that's all I have to say. I'm not, otherwise, I'm not active with any party.
Okay.
I had one more question. I had one more question. On the issue of Israel and Palestine, will you concede that what Israel is doing is wrong to the Palestinians, that it is apartheid?
Yeah, well, of course. Did I imply otherwise before, you think?
No, I just wanted to have that clarified. It's so important to say for a good man to speak out, or evil will triumph. We agree on that.
Okay. No problem.
All right.
I'm not any kind of Zionist.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing. I've got one more question from another audience member, and their question is, she wants to know if you're a supporter of an American anarchy democracy government. So,
anarchy?
Anarchy.
Is that the word?
Yes.
No, I'm not an anarchist. I think to get things done, important big things done, you need the government. You can't just have a bunch of people having total freedom and without a coordination, without a national system. I don't believe in each small town or small city being autonomous. We have too many serious problems, and which are only going to be solved through planning by some overall national body. Some people might call me a Stalinist, but I just mentioned that to give you an idea of where I might be fall in the categories. I'm not an anarchist, even though Noam Chomsky calls himself one.
Right. Well, I don't believe that we need a full nationalistic thing. But once again, no matter how many times you try to. Either if you're going to go into an anarchy or anything else, you're always going to have people with power and greed that want to just eat everybody up around them and make themselves more powerful and more greedy. That's nothing new.
That's partly because they have this all this money behind them, and they have this money because we live in a capitalist system. Now, I'm not an anarchist, but I am a socialist. And in my socialist society, you would not have the private wealth which supports people like the Koch brothers. Such people would not exist. So that's a qualification on what I said before, which is important to keep in mind.
Right. Well, I'm, in a sense, I don't know what to capitalize myself as. I want to call myself a free man, you know, free of any of these idiots that are just trying to tell other people what to do, dominate people in other ways. I understand there needs to be laws, otherwise people would go absolutely berserk and uncivil. But we're at a point to where we have too many laws that really aren't doing anything for us but costing us. And what I mean by costing us is they're really not there, or they're made in a sense just to make other people richer.
Yeah, well, you can't speak of the quantity of laws. When you say we have too many laws, it's not a question of quantity. It's a question of quality. You know, you have to look at the laws as such. What do they say which bothers you? What does they affect which bothers you? That's how you have to deal with it. You can't just say there are too many laws.
Right. Exactly. Well, it seems like more and more laws are being passed that support the government against the citizenry instead of protecting the citizenry from, these people that are trying to take over our country, these people that are trying to monopolize our country, these people that are trying to rip off our country, like the Feds, the Federal Reserve. Of course, we know that we're going into inflation, and we keep going higher and higher into inflation.
Just because we have a very low rate of inflation, very low. It's one of the lowest in the developed world. In fact, it's so low that
right. That's only because we've been on this banking system.
Have lost our cost of living increase. We two or three years in a row we lost because there was no inflation at all. So that is not a problem.
Well, I'm talking about the overall inflation that is putting us into deficit. We're never able to catch up on our debt.
You're mixing two things together. Inflation is not the same as having a deficit.
Well, how is a deficit formed? Isn't it through debt? And why are we in debt? Because we're being charged dollars by the Federal Reserve, which is a private bank. We're being charged interest on our tax dollars.
We're in debt because we expend much more than we take in. That's a simple accounting.
Right. I understand that. It's simple accounting, but it's also, it's also the deregulation of the banks. The banks are doing what they want.
That's because of the corporations. I as a socialist, would say that under socialism, there wouldn't be any private corporations, private banks who can do these things. It's the private ownership and the pursuit of profit before everything else. That's what causes these problems. And I believe in putting people before profit.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I agree with you 1,000%. But, I could see issues with that one, too. Hitler was a socialist.
He was not. Don't be ridiculous. The German had major corporations. Some of them still exist. He joined a party in Austria which had the name socialist in its name back in the early 1920s, and that name stuck. But it was never it didn't become a socialist per se. I mean, that's a total myth. It lived inside of a capitalist Germany. You ever have Krupp, K-R-U-P-P, as one of the major corporations of that time in Germany, which survived even the Second World War. And they were helped. The Nazi government was helped by American corporations like IBM and Ford.
Prescott Bush.
He was a great admirer of Hitler. And
yes.
If Hitler was a socialist, Henry Ford would not be admiring him. And IBM helped the Nazis a lot. So the corporate world knew very well that the Nazis were not socialist.
Right. I've got a caller on line 3, Whitney. You have a question for Mr. Balam? Whitney,
yes.
Are you there?
Yes, I am. My question for you is, what do you expect the American people to do? Because so far they're not doing anything. There's information out there for people to get via the internet, these other social sites. But yet the American people are allowing the government, to do this, to nation build, to invade other countries. And I have to agree with you also we have major issues in this country that are not being addressed. So my question to you is, why do you think the American people are letting the U.S. government get away with this? And if there's anything that we can do, because I personally don't see anything that can be done because the American people have let and allowed the government to take more control.
Yeah, well, my basic advice to people in this context is educate yourself and as many other people as you can about the political and economic facts of life and the facts of life about U.S. foreign policy. Educate yourself and others, and our numbers will grow. And at least in theory, at some point in the future, our numbers will reach a critical mass, and there will be some kind of explosion. And I cannot predict exactly what form that explosion will take, but I can only hope that it will be there. Otherwise, I have to recommend a violent revolution, and I can't do that. That would be suicide against this government. So all I can advocate is educate yourself and as many others as you can.
Well, revolution, I'm sorry, Whitney, do you have any more questions?
No, that's it. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for calling in, Whitney. William, I don't advocate an armed revolution. I don't think that armed revolutions are really going to be helpful at all. But I think a peaceful resistance, in other words, might be the better way to go. Just stop feeding the machine. You know?
Well,
shut it down. Shut down the corporation. Just shut it down. Stop feeding it. Stop, refusing.
How do we shut them down? They are involved in every facet of our daily life. So we stop eating food? So we stop living inside of an apartment?
Well, we've allowed them to take over those factors, but true. Yeah. We have to learn how to fend for ourselves. And most Americans have to learn how to fend for themselves.
Well, I don't
That's
know what
the only
that
way
means.
We can shut them down.
I am not going to build my own house or apartment. I have to rent it from somebody else, and I'm not gonna. I don't grow my own food.
Right.
And I don't.
I understand.
Build my own cars, and I'm not my own doctor, and so on and on and on. We are all dependent upon the system as it is, and the problem isn't the system per se. It's the who owns it. It's the capitalist ownership of everything. That's putting profit before everything. That's the problem. So that's why I advocate socialism, some form of socialism, but not anarchy and not total dropping out of the system, as you are implying, I think. But I can only use the label socialist. That's the closest I can come to a single description of my philosophy.
Right. No, I understand. I understand. A few more questions before we go. Did you think that Saddam Hussein was a real bad guy, or was he just a play-along puppet of the United States?
Well, he wasn't. How much of a puppet can he have been if we overthrew him? And he was a bad guy in certain ways, definitely. He tortured people a lot, but he ran a welfare state. The people of Iraq had free education and free health care and other benefits. So from a purely social point of view, he was not so bad a guy. But he was pretty nasty when it came to torture and the use of certain weapons like gas and so on.
But
we overthrew him not because of anything like that. We overthrew him because he wouldn't be a he wouldn't be a puppet of the U.S. So I don't accept what you're saying about that. He was not a puppet. And that's what cost him his life.
Right. Right. And the same with Gaddafi. He refused to be a puppet of the United States also. And we know that Assad is refusing to be a puppet of the United States. And also the Iranian leadership.
Right. One after another, we look to destroy the independent countries of the Middle East, the ones who refuse to be pawns of Washington. One after another, we make them into basket cases. It's very sad.
All right. So do you think that it is the United States alone that is behind this, the supporting of the rebels? And are these really rebels or are they mercenaries?
Which rebels are you speaking of?
The Syrian rebels or the ISIS, the ISIS group in general?
The U.S., oddly enough, has fought on the same side as al-Qaeda types again and again in the past few decades. They did it first in Afghanistan, and they did it in Bosnia. They did it in Kosovo. They did it in Syria, and they're doing. Excuse me. We have fought on the same side as Al Qaeda again and again, which is quite contrary to what the American people are taught about the aims of U.S. foreign policy. But the rebels in Syria, there are, broadly speaking, two groups of them. There's what the media refers to as the moderate rebels, and then there's the Islamic extremists. And we have, the U.S. has supported, well, they've supported both. They've poured in all kinds of weaponry without knowing where it's going to wind up, and they're still doing that. They just announced $500 million, I think it is, of new weaponry sent to the so-called moderate rebels in Syria. Everybody knows that's going to wind up, a good portion of that's going to wind up in the hands of the non-moderate rebels in Syria and in Iraq. And we overthrew the government of Libya and all their arms were stolen by the extremists in Libya and taken to Iraq, to Syria, to Mali, and elsewhere. The overthrow of Gaddafi has had great and unfortunate consequences for the Middle East and for Africa. Another piece of our legacy.
Well, I want to thank you, sir, for your time, of course, and make sure you guys go out and get his book. It's called America's Greatest Export, Democracy.
Can I mention my website?
Yes, sir. Go ahead. Mention your website,
please. It's William Blum. That's B-L-U-M. WilliamBlum.org. And on that site, you can read about all my books and read excerpts from them.
Oh, great. Great. And once again, thank you again, sir. And be sure
and
to join
welcome.
Us.
Welcome.
Be sure to join us next week. Smartest man in America, Christopher Langen, will be joining us. This is The People Speak. This is Rock Cash. Have a great week. And thank you, Don Newsom, at the BBS Radio Network, for your great sound engineering.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest. this land was made for you and me.